mad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and talking down to me. If you don't love it, leave it, let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country. And you're walking on the fight beside me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe you fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the far down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. I'm singing, be warned. When you run down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in the fog of dark. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be warned. You run down my country, man, you walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. Lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. So much to report, and of course, we've got lots of news for you, which you'll be receiving all this week. Let me give you some thoughts about the coronavirus. And I know there are many opinions out there, and from what I might call the establishment or traditional, that this is a dangerous virus, spreading rapidly and so on, and is a big threat. Others think this is just a hoax, that we're talking about nothing more than a strain of a common flu, and every year the flu does kill many thousands of people, mostly elderly people who are often ill with other things. I don't have an absolutely firm opinion on this. I do think what we've been doing so far in Canada and the United States has been the wrong approach. The right approach, appears to be working in Taiwan. Now, Taiwan is Chinese. Taiwan also is mostly southern Chinese. And you may say, well, what does that, why should that matter? Well, it appears that the susceptibility to the coronavirus is on a racial basis. That is, some people are more susceptible than others. The most susceptible appear to be South Chinese and Japanese. Now, not many people in Japan have have contracted the coronavirus. Largely perhaps because Japan has cut off travel from China, in other words, the source. Okay, so Taiwan should, by all accounts, be an epicenter, or be at least be heavily impacted, but it isn't. And apparently the government of the Republic of China on Taiwan learned early on, perhaps as far back as sometime in November, that something was seriously going wrong in Wuhan province, and that, I should say around Wuhan, and that the Chinese authorities were suppressing information and denying information, that there really was something serious. And they had a pretty good idea of what it was. And what they did was to respond immediately with temperature testing. There's wide testing of temperatures, and I saw a video of life today in Taiwan. People are in cafes, coffee houses, restaurants, enjoying themselves, socializing. Now, many of them are wearing masks. And so what happens? Well, why are these public gatherings not being forbidden, as they are increasingly in the United States and Canada? Well, before people go into one of these gatherings, their temperature is tested. And if they have a fever, they're sent away for further testing to find out if what they have is the coronavirus, and then if they do, they're isolated and treated. And the incidence in Taiwan and the death rate are quite low. So I think we're doing something wrong. I'm going to be offering more views on this in other programs. One thing that I do feel strongly about is that regardless of what coronavirus is, whether it's a hoax exactly, but an exaggeration, or whether it is indeed more or less as being described and that in many parts of the world has not been properly handled. Regardless of what that truth is, I think there is, as Sir Sherlock Holmes would say, there's mischief afoot. And this is what the mischief is. Government is going to use this, or powerful forces are going to use this, as an opportunity to grab more control. I think that's fairly clear. It happened after 9/11. I think it's going to happen now. Now, I had travel back from Western Canada on Saturday. And I had a couple of examples along the way, actually in my recent experiences. Okay, first of all sorts of things are going to be excused by businesses and others coronavirus, in the hopes that we're so afraid of it that you only have to invoke that and we'll shut up. Humorous case in point. Tim Hortons is a major coffee donut chain in Canada. In fact, it's an iconic Canadian corporation, even though actually it's no longer Canadian owned. It's owned by a Brazilian consortium. I was in a Tim Hortons, or I actually can't go into the shops anymore. They've closed the restaurant portion. You have to use the drive-thru. So I use the drive-thru at a Tim Hortons in the Okanagan that is among the worst that I know. It's very, very badly managed. Anyway, I pull up and I'll make my standard order. Could I have a medium coffee, double-double, and a honey dip donut? The voice comes back to me, oh, it's a foreigner. No more honey dip. I said, bake some more. coronavirus. I just swore. Yeah, because I don't think we should be putting up with bullshit. I don't think. Because long, long before coronavirus, was that same Tim Hortons, by about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, quite often didn't have honey dip donuts, which are probably their most popular offering. And I said, long before coronavirus, why don't you bake more? And I will get this frightened deer in the headlights look from the person on the counter. Oh, the baker's gone home. Well, I said, call the baker back. Yeah, I mean, this is just bad management. that Tim Hortons there, I believe, stayed open until 11 o'clock at night. So with perhaps 7 or more hours left in the day, they don't have their one of the major items. And this was on a fairly consistent basis. I don't mean this just happened to be one bad day. It's just bad management. We just don't give a damn for the customers. Anyway, so, okay, that's the past. This is there were actually more stories. I at one point, so, I'm enraged. Canadians don't complain enough. I said, well, can I speak to the manager? Oh, she went home. I said, well, when did she go home? Well, that's 2 o'clock. I said, geez, I'd really have a job like that where I manage a place and I take off halfway through the day. Your woman didn't know what to say. I said, well, who's in charge? Oh, that's the assistant manager. I said, well, can I speak to her? Well, she's on her break. She's on a break, I said. Is nobody in charge? I said, I'd love to have a job here. Nobody's in charge. I can pretty much do what I want. Anyway, the main point I want to make about this, rather than just how badly that particular franchise is managed, is that now anything will be attributed to coronavirus. Okay, more particularly my experiences on Saturday. I arrive at the airport. I go to return my my car, which I do. I find out that I must take my, contract and the keys inside. They don't have anybody on the outside. Well, that's all right, I guess. Some of the other rental companies do. So I went up to the to one of the kiosks for them. There's a sign there: closed because of coronavirus. Come inside the airport. I thought, you know, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Out in a little kiosk in the outdoors would actually be safer, I would think, for the employee than inside the airport complex. But anyway, okay, you know, coronavirus. So I go inside and return my keys. I begin to board the first of two flights that day on Air Canada. And as I do, I'm informed that there will be no service. Air Canada is extremely cheap these last few years, and there's no longer any meals except in overseas flights in economy class. But you do get a free service of tea, coffee, soft drinks, etc. Okay, well, there'll be no service. Why is that? Coronavirus. And then they hand you a bottle of water. Actually, of course, a plastic bottle of water. I think about this. This too is bullshit. There are stewardesses on these planes. Many of them are wearing masks. Fair enough. And they go up and down the aisle, and they will bring you another bottle of water, and they collect the garbage at the end of the flight. If you have some food you brought on board, discarded newspapers. And I thought, well, the stewardess has to go up and down the aisles doing this. Why can't she, or several of them, do a regular drink service? You will order a drink, and they pour. They've got gloves on their hands, plastic gloves, and they pour the drink and they hand it to you. Afterward, or if it's pop a can of pop, they hand it to you with a plastic glass. They're not touching you. And then at the end of near the end of the flight, they come around with their big garbage bags, and you hand over your empties, plus any newspapers you want to discard or other trash. I don't see the reason. Do you? No. I'll tell you what it is. It's cheap, and they save themselves on some drinks. That's an example of and businesses will shamelessly use this, coronavirus excuse. Well then, I'm a member of Aeroplan, and I'm elite. Actually, I'm super elite because I travel so much, and elite members get the right to use the Maple Leaf Lounge at major airports in Canada and abroad, wherever Canada, or often wherever Canada flies. So I fly on to Calgary, and from Calgary I'll fly to Toronto. So I have a little bit of a layover in Calgary for a couple of hours. So I take myself over to the club at the Aeroplan, the Maple Leaf Lounge. Sign on the door, closed. Well, you know, the usual, we apologize to our customers because of coronavirus. I thought, this is even more bullshit. The effect of having the club open would be good if the idea is we should avoid social proximity. In other words, keep a certain distance from people. Where do the customers, now granted their airport was not crowded by normal standards, a lot of flights are canceled, a lot of people are not flying, but okay, where do we go? Well, most of us will end up going toward the gate wherever we will eventually leave. We crowd together. The effect of having the lounge open would be that elite passengers would tend to go to the lounge. Which, and I'm bad on numbers, but my guesses would hold, probably 50 or 60 people quite comfortably and not jammed together. Wouldn't that be a good thing? And, of course, wouldn't it be a good thing for the employees, most of them fairly low wage, to be able to continue working? Wouldn't it? You'd think so. But if you want to save a few shekels, just close it down and say, coronavirus, and we're supposed to say, yes, they're looking after me. No, they're not looking after me. They're looking after themselves. And I think we've really got to watch for this. And I urge people to speak up. Yeah, don't let coronavirus be the mantra that shuts you up, as it was after 9/11. After 9/11, the mantra was national security or security, and so all sorts of things were done to us in the name of security. And quite frankly, I'm just not prepared to go along with that anymore as a reason to shut us up. We've got to be careful, in my opinion, of letting China off the hook. They were the epicenter of this, and their initial lies, and I suspect continued lies, continue to endanger us. Here's a very interesting report from Tucker Carlson.
Well, there's no doubt about it, Tucker. I've heard from colleagues on both sides of the...
This is Representative Jim Banks, a Republican from Indiana.
Who are ready to engage in the same fight that I've been fighting now for several months to hold China accountable for their bad behavior. And we need to start by forcing China to pay the burden and the cost incurred on the United States of America due to the coronavirus. I think there are many ways that we can do that. The president could force China to relieve a great amount of American debt. He could institute tariffs on China and designate the funds from that into a coronavirus victim relief fund to pay the cost incurred on Americans and American taxpayers due to the negligence on China's behalf that's led to the crisis in America today.
So by erasing the debt, the U.S. debt held by the Chinese, we could fund that. Do you think the administration is willing to push for that?
I hope so. President Trump has shown enormous strength and effort so far in the trade deal. When we talk about future trade deals, there's an opportunity, an avenue, and I believe an appetite to go after China to make them pay even further costs. So I hope that would be the case, but I have no doubt that President Trump will do everything that he can to hold China accountable for what they've caused on Americans today.
So one thing I've noticed is that the more people learn about how dependent we are on China for critical goods like pharmaceuticals, medicine, the more upset they are, the more bewildered they are that we let this happen. Do you think, I know this is complex, but if you could just sum it up for me, do you think Congress will actually act in meaningful ways to make this country more independent?
Well, I hope so, Tucker. I'm going to do my part. I mean, one other thing that we can do is stop the VA and the DOD, the two of the largest healthcare networks in America today, from buying medical equipment from China. I mean, those are substantive, real ways that we can begin to disentangle ourselves from China's economy and hold them accountable. I'm going to do my part by authoring more legislation to do things just like that, but it's going to take a partnership between Congress and the...
That was a very good commentary by Representative Jim Banks, Republican of Indiana, and reacting to the fact that the Department, U.S. Department of Defense and the VA are buying medical equipment from China. I think it's come as a rude awakening to many Americans just how dependent the United States has become on China. You know that thing that... The right-wing conspiracy theorists were worrying about, you know, the globalism. Yeah, that globalism isn't quite as wonderful as we were led to believe, is it? I always look upon Pat Buchanan as somebody we should always pay attention to and listen to. And here's a recent column by Pat that... I certainly like, and I think you will too. Americans may rebel against a long coronavirus war. It's a war, says President Donald Trump, of his efforts to contain the coronavirus pandemic and likening his role to that of a wartime president. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo welcomed the president's claim to his commander-in-chief role in the crisis and his resolve. Quote, the president and I agreed yesterday we're fighting the same war, and this is a war. Some measures already taken do call to mind actions in wartime. Commercial airline flights are being reduced or canceled. Schools are being closed. Universities have shut their doors. Where Ford, Chrysler, GM, and other great auto companies shifted production to jeeps, tanks, and bombers in 1942. U.S. auto factories have today been shut down to prevent the spread of the virus. Bars and restaurants are being closed. This month, millions of Americans will be added to the unemployment rolls, and millions of senior citizens and elderly have already followed government directives to self-isolate or shelter in place. There's talk of quarantines lasting not days or weeks. As Americans knew in the days of measles, mumps, chickenpox, scarlet fever, and polio, but months. Imagine if the quarantines last months. While a new social solidarity and spirit of sacrifice seem to be manifesting themselves in this pandemic, can it endure? Is the country prepared for months or years of social isolation, if that's what's required to win this war? It's a question that needs to be considered. I have consider the Chinese government, whose word is admittedly suspect, claimed to have achieved a deceleration in the daily number of new coronavirus infections. The South Koreans say they too have broken and reversed the momentum of the spread of the virus. Both countries tend to have much more faith in South Korea, but they say that you know, the new cases have declined. Well, that's good. On March 3rd, the number of new cases of the coronavirus reported across South Korea was 852. On St. Patrick's Day, that's March 17th, exactly 2 weeks later, the count was 85 new cases, a plunge of 90%. South Korea appears to have flattened the curve. We Americans, however, are far from that. In fact, the infection rate in America and Canada is increasing rapidly. Exactly how far behind South Korea we are cannot be known until more tens of thousands of Americans are tested, and we learn how many cases of the disease are out there undiscovered and unreported. But whatever the success of Asian nations in containing the virus, are we politically and socially able to impose the same draconian measures, ordering people to shelter in place in their own homes, not just for days or weeks, but months? Can this be done in a free society, as it can be done in the surveillance state of communist China? Can mayors and governors of beach towns along the east coast of Maine, along the east coast from Maine to Miami and the Gulf Coast from Florida to Texas to keep tens of millions from gathering on beaches this summer. Last week, we saw college kids cavorting on Florida's beaches, despite warnings that any one of them infected with coronavirus 19 could transmit it to the rest, leading to grave illnesses and in some cases death. Moreover, they can become carriers of the disease to parents and siblings. They did not seem to care. As prohibition proved, Americans are a rule-breaking people. Scores of thousands are injured in auto accidents and thousands killed each year from driving under the influence of alcohol, despite tough laws against drunk driving. Since the 1960s, laws against the use of marijuana or cocaine, heroin, fentanyl have not halted the rampant ingestion of illegal narcotics and dangerous drugs. We are endlessly admonished that climate change poses an existential threat to the planet. But have the elites who profess to believe this given up flying in private jets? Of course not. Have Americans given up their SUVs or ceased to heat their homes with oil and gas? Are parents going to be able to confine to their homes children whose lives are built around friends or playgrounds? Is the crowd on Martha's Vineyard going to give up socializing to prevent the spread of the coronavirus? In the 1960s, we were told that the correlation between cigarette smoking and lung cancer, emphysema, and heart disease is absolute. Yet 34 million Americans continue to risk shortening their lives by smoking. Seniors and elderly, among whom the mortality rate from the coronavirus is the highest, 15% of those over 80 in one estimate, make shelter in places for months. But if in diverse cities minority communities come out for block parties in summer, are we going to have the police march them back into their homes? Do we have enough cops for that? A prediction. The longer the order to shelter in place and self-isolate remains in force, the greater the probability that they will begin to be ignored and people will take risks to end their isolation and be with friends. Will Americans suffer in social isolation inside their homes for months while a state-induced Great Depression washes over the land? My guess is that they will rebel. This identifies Pat as being an advisor to three presidents, a two-time candidate for the Republican presidential nomination, and the nominee for the Reform Party in 2000. He was also a founding member of the McLaughlin Group, which began on NBC and CNN's Capital Gang and Crossfire. His latest book, The Greatest Comeback, How Richard Nixon Rose from Defeat to Create the New Majority. Very interesting call by Pat Buchanan. I was talking to a good friend and supporter and advisor today, and she mentioned that I think this is kind of profound. One of the big unknowns now is the effects of the social isolation that we're being urged to impose on ourselves, keeping about 6 feet away from people in crowds where you can, very big if where you can. If you are sick or think you're sick, your urge to impose a 14-day quarantine on yourself. How do you do that? Oh, I know. If you live alone, okay. If you live with a family, with wife or husband, children, how do you do that? Okay, you don't go out, but they will be to some extent at risk. People with children. If you're urged to self isolate, you keep the kids home. For how long? How do you entertain them? I'm not saying that they have to be out with their friends, but many will want to be. Some people are comparing this to the perhaps to the Great Depression. It may be a little premature to do that. Events are moving very rapidly. But one of the points that was made in the discussion with my advisor today, and I thought it was a good one, when compare this to the Depression. Now, I guess I started at the end of the conversation by saying, well, Canadians, except perhaps people who have emigrated from Eastern Europe or have memories of, you know, post-war Germany, we really don't have, as a collective, memories of times when things were, food was in short supply. Now, we're not sure that we're going to be there yet. Right now, there's a problem getting certain products in Canada, and of course, right across North America, toilet paper for one, not because there isn't any, but because hoarders have scarfed it up for reasons that make no sense. Even if you accept the mainstream description of coronavirus, well, we're told coronavirus attacks the lungs. It would actually make sense to hoard some Kleenex, but toilet paper? Your needs for toilet paper will be presumably about what they always are. There seems to be a universal, at least in much of North America, run on toilet paper. People buy it as if it's tulip bulbs during the Dutch tulip craze of 300 years ago. But should there be shortages? Should there be a lot of unemployment? Now, there are calls for, projections, unemployment could rise from roughly 6% now to 20% or more, very quickly. I'm thinking of some of the fast food places that have cut back their staff or closed entirely. I'm wondering, almost immediately, those people are unemployed. What do people do during periods of discouragement and unemployment? Well, one of the things that people had going for them during the Depression was escapist entertainment. There were music halls, but more importantly, there was the motion picture, and people would go to the movies. They were inexpensive. They were changing frequently. And it was a way to get out, or if they had a little bit of money, during the Depression, I guess they could go to a bar and have a drink, or go to a restaurant. But many restaurants are now closed. Bars are closed in most parts of Canada. Movie theaters are closed. Other forms of mass entertainment, hockey, curling, concerts, all closed because we're trying to avoid public gatherings. Can we deal with this for a few weeks, a month? Yeah, I think that we can. Can we deal with this for longer? I think the stresses are going to be incredible. Oh yeah, unlike during the Depression, the schools are open. During the Depression, the schools were open. They're not today. There was a sense of normalcy. Children are now in Ontario. This will be the second full week that they'll be home. Now, last week, in a sense, doesn't count. That was March break. This week will count. This is something new. It's one thing to have children in their teen years find things to do. And I'm certainly thinking many can do a lot on the internet, a lot of good things on their own. But younger children, now parents have the problem, they're home. What if the parent still has a job? And hopefully most do. How do they make arrangements for their care? We have, for many reasons, many of them not good, moved away from large families. where there's perhaps a grandma or grandpa or auntie or even older brother and sister who might be able to plunge in and help out. Many people regrettably rely on daycare if those centers are shut down. Where are the people going to go? What are they going to do? These could be profound changes. Certainly in the short run. And I agree with Pat Buchanan. We can muddle through. If this is relatively brief. If it's longer, and I guess at this point we just don't know. If it's longer, then what? This is an interesting report, and I'm glad to see this on the part of the U.S. Especially the U.S. government, Mike Pompeo particularly, and President Donald Trump are talking about holding the Red Chinese accountable for what Mike Pompeo calls the Wuhan virus. Donald Trump has repeatedly stuck to his guns by calling it the Chinese virus. And when he was challenged at a press conference last Wednesday, well, how can you say that? Because it comes from China, he says. Initially, the Chinese withheld a lot of timely information. And that's important. Information often is it's very important to have it in a timely fashion, not just to have it, but to have it when you can still do something about it. In my comments about Air Canada, I have negative view of some businesses and I must say my view on business has changed over my lifetime. As a teenager, I came under the influence fairly briefly of Ayn Rand, Jewess, the philosophy of objectivism or radical individualism. That appealed to me up to a point. I am still an individualist. I've lived my life that way and encourage other people to do so too, but I'm not a person who any longer believes that individualism is all there is. That is, we are only individuals. Anyway, in those days I used to think very highly of businesses. I thought, the businessman was the rugged risk taker, entrepreneur, and all those good things. I have found that businessmen are generally brighter than other people, and certainly no more moral. Maybe no less, but certainly no more moral. Anyway, here is something that Ron Hoffman put up on Twitter, and check out the prices of ground beef. I took these photos in Walmart in Winnipeg, in Western Canada, and there is a package of extra lean ground beef, and it's $16.67 for 450 grams. No, It's $16.67 per, I guess, per kilogram. There is halal lean ground beef, and it's $13.13 per kilogram. A kilogram is roughly 2.2 pounds. The comment is certainly Gus Stefanis of the Canadian Nationalist Party says ground halal ground beef cheaper than non at Walmart, obviously encouraging non-Muslims to buy halal, which is a form of inhumane slaughter. Also, halal certification donates monies to Islamic organizations. Yeah, it's the same scamorama as kosher products. The producers of many foodstuffs, not just meat. That's almost a separate thing with kosher, but even cans of stewed tomatoes or bottles of water, for heaven's sakes, have the kosher label, which is usually a K in a circle or a UC in a circle. And in order to get that, they have to pay a rabbinical organization a fee for certification. And of course, this has been a long-standing question and argument. How much is that fee? Well, we're not told. When you try to pin down food producers, you'll get vague answers that, well, it's not very, it's very small per human. Oh yeah, and of course the proper understanding of that is, yeah, like it might only be half a cent per tin of stewed tomatoes. But how much does that mean for the consumer over a year? That half a cent per can of stewed tomatoes sure adds up. Anyway, my comment on this was that, once again, you've got businesses, big businesses, quite prepared to whore to minority interests against the interests of the majority. So I would strongly urge you, if you see items like this, go and confront the manager and say, hey, what about this? Why are minority goods or goods certified acceptable to, in this case, Muslims, this halal, why are they cheaper than goods that are not so certified? Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me. Going to take my musical break right now, and going to play some upbeat music. There's certainly enough fear and concern. Well, let's have a little bit of good German drinking music. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Yeah. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me, back with you again tomorrow, same time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Our fair dominion now extends from Grace to Nootka's Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours, which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.